You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
Last week, the Coalition government confirmed it would deliver on its election commitment to take agriculture out of the emissions trading scheme. The emissions trading scheme is a key tool for meeting New Zealand's domestic and international climate change targets by requiring businesses to measure and report on their greenhouse gas emissions, to surrender one emissions unit to the government for each one tonne of emissions they emit, and by limiting the number of emissions units available to emitters. I asked the ACT Party's Simon Court about this in terms of upholding New Zealand's international obligations, as well as how the new pastoral sector group will tackle biogenic methane. I also asked Simon about reports of the ACT Party's culture of fear in its election campaign leadership and how the party is addressing them. Lastly, I asked about the ACT Party's rally last Sunday, where ACT leader David Seymour set a goal of 15% of the vote at the 2026 election. Here is that interview. So last week it was announced that the Coalition government confirmed it will deliver on its election commitment to take agriculture out of the emissions trading scheme. In October 2016, New Zealand submitted its nationally determined contribution in ratifying the Paris Agreement, outlining its plans to reduce emissions primarily through the emissions trading scheme. How then do you propose this move is upholding our international obligations and commitment to reducing emissions?
Well, the amendment to the Climate Change Response Act that the Coalition agreed to, campaigned on and agreed to, actually is to remove agricultural production, animal processors and fertiliser companies from the ETS before 1st of January 2025. But these organisations already pay for their emissions associated with non-farm activities, so all the diesel, all the natural gas, all the petrochemicals, everything else that they use that has emissions that are covered by the ETS they already paid for. So it's going to take some time before New Zealand is ready to bring our agricultural system into an emissions management scheme and have them paying for their emissions, because while the commitment was made by James Shaw at Glasgow, there was no evidence, there was no realistic pathway to achieve any of those targets with the science that's available and without inducing a massive cut to New Zealand's agricultural production to meet those targets. So the Coalition government and New Zealanders can't accept that. Food producing country like New Zealand can't accept arbitrary targets being announced by, you know, essentially political representatives for headlines, whether it's on the international stage or locally, that affect business and our ability to produce food and people's ability to access food at affordable prices. So that's why we've removed agriculture from the New Zealand ETS.
As well, the government has scrapped He Waka Eke Noa, a partnership to reduce primary sector emissions, and is setting up a new pastoral sector group to constructively tackle biogenic methane. How is the new pastoral sector group, quote, constructively tackling biogenic methane, as Agriculture Minister Todd McClay said? How then are you achieving those targets?
Yeah, so we do need to find practical tools and new technology for our farmers to reduce their emissions in a way that won't reduce production or the value that we recover, that we gain from exports. I mean, you know, agricultural production, I think, makes up somewhere around 25-30% of New Zealand's GDP. And so what the pastoral sector group will do is identify ways to reduce emissions through the entire supply chain. And one of the reasons that this government has cancelled the He Waka Eke Noa, what the previous government called a partnership, is that it actually excluded some parts of the supply chain where you could potentially reduce emissions the most, like the actual meat processors, the dairy companies. So rather than it just being something between, you know, federated farmers and, you know, kind of the peak bodies like Dairy New Zealand and Beef and Lamb, what this government is doing is actually involving those organisations that do the processing, that have the big industrial plant, that use a lot of heat, a lot of energy, you know, produce effluent and wastewaters at the back end of their process, you know, produce solid waste materials. What would be really helpful is for them to participate, to identify how they might reduce emissions through their, what essentially our industrial processes contributing to the agricultural supply chain. That's, that, you know, we just think that's practical, and that's just one example of where we think this government can make much greater inroads into reducing emissions from the agricultural supply chain rather than just focusing on what happens on farm.
Okay, moving on. I wanted to touch on Stuff's reporting of ACT's campaign leadership last year creating a, quote, culture of fear, which saw unfair treatment of women who had to fight too hard to be heard and some and force some senior staff and volunteers to quit the party. In response to the reports, ACT leader David Seymour described the election campaign as positive, that he was proud of the culture in ACT and that the party was a good place for women. How is ACT ensuring its party is a good place for women, as Seymour said?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, just in response to the allegations that were made, it is common for volunteers and staff to move on at the end of a political campaign. But, you know, we were surprised at the response we got, or that was described in the media, because it wasn't unexpected, and it certainly wasn't the exodus that was described. You know, we did have a staff member leave after the election. We had a contractor who finished just recently, and of course, the campaign staff and volunteers, are either on fixed term contracts, or many of them have actually come over and joined our organisation in full time roles after the campaign. So, you know, we're pretty happy with that. When it comes to the cultural side of things, we've done a review into the performance of our election campaign, but also how people felt about it who were involved. And, that was an opportunity where volunteers and candidates and staff were invited to provide free and frank feedback. And that review's only just been completed. So I'm sure that whatever recommendations come out of that that are provided to the board will be acted on.
Yeah, just coming back to my question, though, what support does ACT provide staff with, particularly for women, to make it a good place for women?
Well, the ACT party and the ACT caucus, the party supports, is a good place for women to work and to participate in if they're interested in politics. I mean, we have a number of fantastic women in our caucus and as ministers. We've got Brooke Van Velden, we've got Karen Chaw, who comes from a background of experiencing family violence and who now has the role as Minister for Prevention of Family and Sexual Violence. And Nicole McKee, it's a mother of four who, has three daughters. And so, all I would say is, and of course, Brooke Van Velden, our deputy leader, who ran a fantastic campaign in Tamaki and was very well supported by women in her campaign team and also, in the community who voted for her. So, I would reject any suggestion that ACT is not supporting women, either, within the party or in the work that we do to make people's lives better in New Zealand through better public policy. It's just unfortunate to hear those accusations bandied around, and we don't see any evidence of that in the way we work or amongst the people we work with.
And so with the review that you've done, will the party be making changes to those existing support systems to improve?
I'm sure that whatever feedback the board get and recommendations that are made, they will act on, but I'm not privy to that.
Okay, moving on. At an ACT party rally last Sunday, Seymour set a goal of 15% of the vote at the 2026 election. ACT got 8.64% of the vote last year, and comparatively, the Green Party got 11.6% of the vote. In a One News Variant poll at the end of April, ACT was down a point to 7%, and the Greens up 2 points to 14%. With those figures considered, how is 15% of the vote a realistic goal for ACT in 2026?
Well, this is a fun question for people who are really interested in politics. So I'll give you a bit of background. We commission our own research, and every couple of weeks we get feedback about how we're going. And, of course, it also covers off the issues that are important to New Zealanders, like around the cost of living and access to healthcare, for example. But, what our research shows is, around 22% of people are open to voting for ACT. And what that means is that if we can convert those people who see ACT as a party they could give their vote to and who like what we do and are happy with our performance and think we're making a positive contribution in government and to New Zealand, if we can convert some of that 22% into votes, even two-thirds of them, then that comes to around 15%. Now, this type of research and then thinking about strategy development is something that all political parties do. It's just that ACT is in quite a unique position right now because we are a policy and results-focused party, and you know, we've been building our credibility around that in many different portfolio areas. Over the last 3 years in opposition and now in government, we're producing results for people across a number of different work streams. And so, you know, we feel that it's realistic to convert potential voter intention into actual results at the next election.
That was the ACT Party's Simon Court speaking to me about taking agriculture out of the emissions trading scheme, reports about the ACT Party's mistreatment of staff, as well as the party's 15% of the vote goal for 2026.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.